right, what do we got?
Just came in. Heart attack. 5'9", 300 pounds, 32 years old.
Obesity-related diseases are a nearly $150 billion medical burden every year.
A shocking new report from the Centers for Disease Control shows America's obesity rates show no signs of slowing down. The CDC reports that 20% of American adults are obese. That's 2 out of 5 people.
Obesity has become a global epidemic, with the World Health Organization warning that 1/3 of the world's population are now thought to be obese or overweight.
This one-year-old baby is so overweight, he made news around the world. But soon, stories like these won't be shocking anymore. In Britain, our kids are also getting fatter. 1 in 4 preschool children in the UK is overweight or obese, and unless the trend changes, our kids could become too fat to toddle.
Well, Wednesday marked World Obesity Day, and the World Obesity Federation says if current trends continue, 2.7 billion adults will be overweight or obese by 2025.
Ng childhood obesity. Ang mga batang tabaching.
This monument to greasy gluttony is called the Heart Attack Grill. Quadruple bypass burger. Oh, and they do have fries called flatliner fries. He is chowing down on a quadruple bypass.
Even though my cardiologist and my wife tell me not to come, and after surviving a coma and multiple heart surgeries, I still come. I enjoy the burgers.
The problem isn't only what Americans eat, it is how much we eat.
Britain is too fat and is getting fatter, and doing nothing is not an option.
It's basically the biggest health problem facing the world.
Some of the health risks include diabetes,
high blood pressure,
metabolic syndrome,
stroke,
sleep apnea,
high cholesterol, hypertension,
cardiovascular disease.
My entire body is in constant pain.
I'm in so much pain, it hurts so bad.
I might not be living till the end of the year.
Oh, my heart, my kidneys, my liver, my legs.
I don't want to be fat for the rest of my life. I've got diabetes,
sleep apnea,
high blood pressure.
I get dizzy when I get up.
Everything's hurting now.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and Holy Spirit, amen. Today is the 5th month, the 31st day, and it's year 2018, and it's Corpus Christi Day. The title of this lecture is A Catholic Lecture on Diet and Exercise. Now this, I'm taking this from an article that I finished, and it's either, and the article is titled A Catholic Article on Diet and Exercise. And it's either going to be a separate article, or I may include it in The Rule of Mary's Little Remnant. That's what we're working on also, which contains the rules of how Catholics should live their lives. So it's going to be in either one of those places. I'm not sure where to put it yet. But I'm basically taking this lecture from that article. Now, first of all, we read from Ecclesiasticus 23:6, "Take from me the greediness of the belly, and let not lust of the flesh take hold of me." It's a sin against the fifth commandment to be greatly or extremely over or under fat, unless being underfat is caused by illness or involuntary deprivation. This sin is venial or mortal, depending on how it harms your health. Now, everybody's going to say, what's this overfat, underfat he just talked about? Why didn't he say overweight or underweight? This is a big issue, which we're going to get into right here. The main thing that makes people unhealthy is not their weight. It's the percentage of their body fat in their body. That's what makes people unhealthy. That's the most accurate way to determine then if whether you're in that sinful category is by taking your body fat percentage. It's called the BFP test, and it tells you how much body fat your body fat is, how much body fat you have in relation to the rest of your body. So, for instance, body fat percentage is a total amount of body fat divided by the total body weight listed as percentage. For example, a 180-pound man with 30 pounds of body fat has a fat percentage of 16%, 30 over 180. The standard chart that measures your percentage of body fat, which goes just by height and weight, called the BMI, is called a body mass index, is not accurate. It's the general figures for a population of people, but it's not accurate because it doesn't give you, because for an example, you can have somebody according to the BMI who's extremely overweight, even extremely overweight, but he's in great shape, like a football player, a lineman who's he's all muscle, but there's no fat in there. But according to the BMI, that guy would be extremely overweight. Or somebody could be greatly overweight and he could be in great shape. So it depends on, is it mostly muscle or is it mostly fat? So the BMI is only a general thing, but it's not the most accurate way to take your body fat percentage. So you don't want to go by those chart indexes, but you could say that if you fit within that index of the charts, you're probably going to be okay, unless you fall into what I'm going to get into in a minute, is called the skinny fat category. We're going to get to that in a second. So, and we're also going to tell you in this lecture how you measure your body fat, the different techniques in which you can do that. And that's called the BFP. Now, as I just said, certain people like wrestlers and especially sports players, they have a lot of bulk on them. You could have a guy like 5'11", he's 215 pounds, but he's solid rock, or 230, but according to the measurements, he would be overweight. Now, here's the skinny fat. Now, the same thing can happen with a person who, according to the BMI, height and his weight and his height, it says he's normal. But he's not normal because he's got more fat than muscle. So even though he's thin or light or normal, it's all fat and no muscle. Very minimal muscle. So that they call those people skinny fat. So you could even be thin and you could still be fat because you got more fat than muscle. That's what I would even tell you when people are starting to lose weight. You want to do two things. Because when you lose weight, you lose fat and muscle. You want to be doing exercises so that you don't lose muscle. We're going to get into the necessity of exercising in this also. And those are called skinny fat people. In other words, I call the body fat percentage test the blubber index. You know, how much blubber you got on you, quite simply. All right, now fat is located in two parts of the body. It's located in subcutaneous fat under the skin, or visceral fat, which is that which surrounds the organs. And there's also several different kinds of fat. We're not going to get into it here. We're just talking about where fat is located in the body. Subcutaneously and viscerally, which surrounds the internal organs. The visceral fat that surrounds the internal organs is the more dangerous if that's high. That's the more dangerous one than the subcutaneous fat. Hence, you could be like a normal weight as far as your BFP is concerned, your total fat percentage, but if your visceral fat's high, you're going to have a problem. And you have to work on it. And that's why we're going to also give you ways to test this. We're going to get into that later on. All right? Now, people are going to need to know that the sin is, it's a venial sin if you're greatly over fat or under fat. It's a venial sin. It's a mortal sin if you're extremely over fat or under fat. It goes both ways. However, it's not a sin if you're just slightly over fat. We're going to get into that also. Slightly being slightly over fat is not a sin. It's not even a fault. Now, doctors may tell you need to lose weight if you're slightly over fat, but we as Catholics don't say that because we don't believe everybody has to be perfectly physically fit. We're going to get into that also. And some people categorize people as being slightly under fat, but to me, there's no such category as that. Because there's an essential amount of body fat that everybody needs. And if you're below that essential amount, you're in sinful categories. But if you're above that amount, you can't say someone's slightly underweight. If someone's, according to your charts, is slightly underweight, they're as healthy as anybody. But somebody who's slightly overweight, though, even though it doesn't harm their health, it hampers their health. But it doesn't harm their health. We're going to get all into that right now. How it affects your health. It is unhealthy to have too much fat or too little fat in the body. The body needs some fat to be healthy and survive, and thus it is unhealthy to be greatly or extremely under fat. If being under fat is voluntary, then sin is committed. There is no involuntary way of being greatly or extremely over fat unless they force feed you. Now, if you're under fat, it can happen. It's not your fault because you have an illness or involuntary deprivation. They lock you up and they're not feeding you. Then it's not your fault. The health of persons greatly over or under fat is greatly harmed, and the health of persons extremely over or under fat is extremely harmed. However, the health of those slightly overfat is not harmed, but only hampered. A slightly overfat person would feel better at the normal fat level. But according to us as Catholics, they can stay that way and they're not committing any sin or a fault. Now, as doctors will tell you, when you're greatly or extremely overfat, several serious illnesses you get by being fat. My father was a medical doctor. He said most of the illnesses people came in his office with were because they were they called it overweight then. We say overfat, and they would be cured if they would just lose weight. Some of the main ones are diabetes, type 2, and high blood pressure, and several other illnesses come from being overfat. And there's illnesses that come from being underfat, bad ones too, on that side. So generally, the doctor will tell you those things, that if you did lose that weight to become normal fat levels or acceptable fat levels, you're not going to have that blood pressure problem or the diabetes type 2. Some people have diabetes that's inherited. No matter what weight they are, they have it. It's just a different issue. Now, as I just said before, the reason we're allowing for the slightly overweight category, overfat category, is because we don't want everybody to be perfectly physical fit. We're not health nuts in the Catholic Church, all right? Not everybody has to be. You know, you can be. We have all different types of people. I look at some of those Russian women or Ukrainians; they're a little bit heavy, but they don't look to me as being sinfully heavy. Just, or even some of the Russian guys who are barrel chested and kind of big, you know. Hence, beware of some doctors or others who want every person to be a specimen of perfect physical fitness. Catholics must not be health nuts. That is not to say that everyone who's perfectly physically fit is a health nut, but only that physical fit, the physical fit who believe that everyone who is not like them is weak, sinful, or inferior. Beware of those people. Everyone has to be like that, perfectly physically fit. Then those are health nuts. Also, beware of the Stoics, who go to the other side. They are extremely or greatly underfat, and they try to get as much underfat as you could, and it harms their health, and some of them it even kills. They killed some of their own people, abbots who put them under the stricture of being underfat, and they themselves almost died. And if it wasn't for an abbot interceding, such as Bernard was a Stoic bastard, and several times people had to force him to eat or he would have died. That's a mortal sin against the fifth commandment. Okay, so beware of these Stoics that think you got to be like emaciated. Emaciating is not good. And if it's voluntary, you're in either venial sin or mortal sin, depending on how emaciated you are. I'll give you an example, all right? You want to look at Jesus Christ, he would be a perfect example. According to the Stoics, Jesus Christ was overweight, overfat, and he wasn't like them. Because if you take a look at the Shroud of Turin, we can see Jesus was about 6 foot tall, and he was between 180 and 200 pounds, and thus of a normal weight, not emaciated. So according to them, though, he's not one of them. He's not as great and good as they are. Now, I'm not going to get into detail on that part here, but it is very important for those people who go to the other side. Nowadays, we mostly have people that are overfat. But years ago, when you had a lot of Stoics around, then you got that problem too. But if you want to read more about that, see my book, The Hellenization of Christianity by the Anti-Church Fathers and Scholastics, the chapter titled The Stoics and Epicurean Philosophies, that go into all this in detail in that chapter. Now, so what are we saying? That food itself is not intrinsically evil. It's the over or under intake of food that's sinful, not the food itself. So all foods that God has given us to eat are good in proper measure, such as red meat, poultry, vegetables, eggs, coffee, tea, fruits, candy, desserts, chocolate. Oh, some of the Stoics out there. Chocolate! Oh, cheese and alcohol are good in proper measure. We read from 2 Esdras 8-10, go eat fat meats and drink sweet wine, and send portions to them that have not prepared for themselves, because it is the holy day of the Lord, and be not sad, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. Matthew 15:17-18, Jesus says, do you not understand that whatsoever enter into the mouth goeth into the belly, and is cast out into the privy? But the things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and these things defile a man. So it's not what you eat, it's if you eat too much or if you eat too little, then you got a problem with the amount of the intake, but the food itself is not evil. St. Augustine said, it is not the uncleanness of meat that I fear, but the uncleanness of an incontinent appetite. I know that permission was granted Noah to eat every kind of flesh. That was good for food, and Elias was fed with flesh. And St. Augustine on Christian Doctrine, Book 3, Chapter 12 says, we must therefore consider carefully what is suitable to times and places and persons, and not rashly charge men with sins. For it is possible that a wise man may use the daintiest of food without the sin of Epicureanism or gluttony, while a fool will crave for the vilest food with the most disgusting eagerness of appetite. And any sane man would prefer eating fish after the manner of our Lord to eating lentils after the manner of Esau, or barley after the manner of oxen. So he's saying you can eat really great tasting foods. You look at the French people on the whole, they're usually thin and they have very good food tasting food. It's good. God gave us taste buds so we can enjoy food. We always thank God, not just for the good tasting food, but the taste buds to taste it, okay? So all I'm getting at here, all the foods God put before us is good, but now we're getting there, but in proper measure. And there's certain types of foods you should eat less of, and some types of foods you can eat more of. We're going to get into that now. Which, if you are already of acceptable weight, which means you're either normal fat or you're slightly over fat, if you're in that category, you just have to have a good diet and exercise to maintain that. If you're in the sinful categories, then you're going to have to do more dieting and exercise to get into that normal or slightly overfat categories. Now, a good diet consists of an acceptable calorie intake and a healthy balance of foods, such as meats, fish, vegetables, bread, milk, milk products, sweets, fruits, etc. You do not have to eat all these types of food, but a certain balance of essential foods is necessary. All your calories must not come from one kind of food, and some foods, such as sweets, must be taken in a minimal amount. Hence, these kinds of food are good or acceptable in minimal amounts, but harmful in medium or large amounts. A candy bar can contain as much calories as a big piece of meat and a big bowl of soup. You can still eat the candy bar or other sweets, and it would even be good for you, but only if you eat a minimal amount compared to the other foods you eat during the day. It's very important on this one. People, this is the United States. You know, so the United States is one of the most fattest places in the world for the fat people. Mexico, and then fattest is in Samoa. When people come here from the Orient and they're thin, one generation, they're fat. The biggest thing is sweets and carbohydrates. They love eating sweets. There's nothing wrong with desserts, but when you're eating three desserts a day, or you put on your plate a dessert like this, then you've overdone it. So, and then you're going to ruin it for yourself, because then you're not, if you're in a mortal sin category and you're not controlling yourself, and we're going to get into that later, and I control over you being a fat farm or a monastery until you lost it. And we'd force you to lose it if you didn't do it yourself, if we had power over you. But we do have power over the Catholics around us here. Spiritual power, which God even enforces physically if people try to give us trouble here. Now, so that's a big thing that people don't understand, and you can go to two extremes. You can say all desserts are bad, or you can say you can eat too many desserts, and if you find yourself having popsicle sticks and little candy bars and things, and you're eating them during the day, you're in big trouble already, and you're ruining for yourself, because then when you come to a meal, you're eating more sweets, and they're taking some of these kids, even some of these sodas, they have a soda this big. And it's like a whole day's calorie, one of these big sodas, 2,000 calories. That's it. That's your calories for the whole day, and it has no nutrients in it. So be very, very careful about how many sweets you take in. And you also got to watch your carbohydrates also. That's if you're in the sinful categories, or even if you're slightly in the overfat category, which is acceptable, you don't want to go into the venial sin category. Now, if you're already maintaining an acceptable weight, and you're not counting calories, then you don't need to count calories. When I was young, I can eat a whole lot. When you're younger, you can eat more. As you get older, your metabolism slows down. I can eat a lot, and I was always thin. As I started getting older, though, as I am now, I'm 62 years old, I started to count my balance in it. I'm not saying count, I'm starting to count and measure what I'm eating, because your metabolism. But if you're eating and you're not counting calories and you're in acceptable and you're not in a sinful category, you don't need to count calories. Just do what you do. Keep eating the way you're eating and you're fine. But I think with most people, as they get older, you'll find out it catches up to them and they find out, hey, I'm getting a little bit too heavy. What do I need to lose weight? Even if you're in a slightly overweight category, you want to feel a little bit better. But especially if you're in the venial sin or mortal sin categories, you really got to work on it. So that in those cases, then, if you're in a venial or mortal sin category, you better start counting your calories. If you're in those categories, and find out how many calories you're taking in and how much is coming from sugars and carbohydrates. And now I have a chart that measures all this stuff. We'll show it to you. I have it in the article, and you can keep a record of all these things. And if you don't do it, it's your own fault. If you need to do it. But my main point on this is, I'm not telling everybody's got to go out and count calories. When I was young, I didn't have to. So only if you find yourself falling into the venial or mortal sin categories is it then absolutely necessary. Sometimes I just as my own note, myself, during the week on holy days of obligation and like the Lord's Day stuff, I eat bigger meals. And I eat such a big meal because I'm visiting people, I can't count what I'm eating. I just call that a big meal day. Then when I'm eating during a week, I then measure myself and I know what I'm eating. So you can get, you can even gain as much as 3 pounds in one big meal, but during the week you'll lose that, you'll lose it all. If you're eating, if you're not eating big meals every day. So there's the other thing about when you're eating, we go over that. That's why it's good you're fasting sometimes, because a fast day then cuts that out, and you can still eat a greater amount on the day because you're going to be fasting the next day. The main thing is to know your body and balance it out so that you fall into the acceptable categories of normal fat or slightly over fat, and you don't enter into a venial or mortal sin category. There's certain foods that can burn fat, such as green tea and other things, and suppress the appetite somewhat. However, beware of quick fixes. There is no quick fix. Even if you're taking these things that burn calories, and they say this magical thing, take this pill and take that pill, nothing, and everyone who's honest and knows about this tells you, nothing. If you have to lose weight, you need to diet and you need to do exercise. You need to do both. If you're not doing it and you need to lose it, you got big problems if you're in a sinful category. And don't lie to yourself or anyone. You need to do diet and exercise. I don't think you're going to sit on the couch like a fat slob eating bonbons all day and take a green tea thing and that's going to burn it off. It ain't going to work that way. These fat Americans, you know, these kids, take a look at the kids over here, the way they are. Now, that's just, it's a sign of, when you're sinfully over fat, it's a sign of pride too. There's something else going on, a rebellion against God. Now, also another tip, like there's certain foods that are low in calories, like pickles are zero calories and cabbage is zero calories. I didn't know that. I had to start counting calories myself. And I said, pickles, I still don't believe it, but it says it on there, zero. You mean if I ate like 50,000 pickles, like I'm not going to gain weight? I don't know. But it says zero on the pickle thing. And cabbage is, another good thing is meat. A high protein diet really does work. Meat. It really, you can lose weight on a high protein diet way more than if you're doing carbohydrates and sugars. You should have more meat, really. That diet works. But whatever works for you, but I'm just giving you an example. It does work. But if you had corned beef with cabbage, the cabbage fills it up. It makes you fill up a little, but there's not calories in it. But if you count, I was almost like a stoic early on where I wasn't eating desserts. Now I'm eating desserts too, and I'm still keeping my weight right, and it's going down. And you can even be losing weight while you're eating desserts. I eat desserts now. I would only eat desserts on holy days and the Lord's Day, but now I'm eating them during my regular week. But I just, like ice cream, I take a cup. Read the thing. Don't take 2-3 cups, and don't start, if that's my dessert for the day. You don't wake up in the morning, have a dessert, have another dessert, and another dessert, then you're in big problems. Then you will. And then what's bad is you're not even eating that much. Like, you can eat more of the other food and you're burning, taking up all your calories on the sweets. It's a little tip on that. Now, I said, when you're fasting, we have penitential seasons, we have non-penitential seasons. And when you have your penitential seasons, like Advent and Lent, you're only allowed to have one meal a day, and you can't have desserts and you can't have alcohol. And so you're limited on your fasting days, fasting seasons. And then on the feasting seasons, there is no fasting. So normally, if you're fasting and feasting the right way as Catholics, you're going to gain weight when you're feasting. If not, then you're not feasting. You're committed sin also. And when you're fasting during a penitential season, you're going to lose weight. My weight goes between 10 pounds from the fasting season to the end of the feasting season. I go between 10 pounds here or there, depending. And you have to fluctuate, because if you're not fluctuating, then you're not fasting or you're not feasting, and you need to feast too, not just fast. We're not Stoics here. We feast and we fast. And that makes even a fast even a little more challenging when you have that extra weight. Now you got to take it off and go back up. So many Stoics, they get so used to not eating, they go, I don't even want to eat anymore. It doesn't even bother me. When there's no penance in that. Why don't you pick up some weights and start lifting them? Go out in a war, start fighting somebody face to face. Go out evangelizing people, other kind of things that can cause pain. But I don't want to get into that here on the Stoic thing. I talk a lot about in the book. But so you got to expect your weight to fluctuate. The main thing is when your weight is fluctuation, just be careful not to go into any sinful category. To become sinfully underweight, underfat, or sinfully overfat. Stay within that normal fat and slightly fat range, which I'm going to show you on the chart so you can determine what those ranges are. Another thing the Stoics hate, but God does not condemn it, it's even good for man, is alcohol and smoking. Alcohol, we read about the alcohol in Ecclesiastes 31, 35. Wine was created in the beginning to make men joyful and not to make them drunk. Jesus turned the water into wine. His first miracle was changing water into wine at the miracle of Cana. Alcohol is a very good thing to you in proper measure. If you drink too much of it and get drunk, then it's a sin. But it's actually even good for you. And I'm going to give you a little hint on drinking, too. All kinds of alcohol is good for you to drink in moderation, not to get drunk. And they'll tell you that even like certain alcohols are more put more weight on you, like beer, the typical beer belly. But usually the wine, or the guy who drinks wine, he's usually thin. But what I'm saying, I'm not saying you can't drink beer. Beer is still good. But if you want to mix it up, like me, I'll tell you what my schedule is in a second. If you want to mix it up, then you could have some beer, and the other days you have some wine. And so, and they even say wine burns calories. It's got a lot of wine, and some good effects to you. But alcohol in general is good. Our Lord says that. Smoking too, cigars, pipes, and cigarettes is good in moderation. As long as you don't smoke to the point where it's harming your health, and as long as you don't smoke in the presence of other people whom the smoke is harming, and you know that. You got to be considerate. If other people don't like to smoke, don't do it in their presence. Have your own smoking room. Smoke outside. If it's my own RV, I'll give you an example of what my schedule is here. I have about every night I have one cigar and a cup and a half of wine, 1.5 cups of wine every night, except on fasting days. That means Advent and Lent, I don't have any wine or smoke any cigars at all, except on the Lord's Day. On the Lord's Day, I don't smoke a cigar because I'm out here watching movies with you, and I don't want to blow the smoke in your face. So when I'm home, I have one cigar a night, and I have a cup and a half of wine every night, unless it's a fasting day, and I don't have cigars on the Lord's Day because I'm out here watching movies with the brothers. Now, there's been many people who live in their hundreds, 90s. They have a cup of brandy and a cigar every night. I don't want to mention, I don't want to give him credit, but he's a Jew guy, but you might. But there's a lot, not just him, but there's a lot. They live to 90 and they smoke, but they do it in moderation, you see. And every night they have a little brandy or they have a little cigar or a couple of cigarettes, but not to the point where it harms your health. Okay? So, So beware of doctors who, some doctors and others who condemn sweets, alcohol, caffeine, and smoking as something intrinsically unhealthy. There's many people in their 90s who have, and they watch out for the signs too, because 1 week this is bad, now it's good. Now it's good, now it's bad. Now it's bad, now it's good. They change and they go up and they go back and forth. And when you drink alcohol in moderation and smoke in moderation, you will not get addicted to it. Beware of those people. They're like Stoics, the alcohol anonymous people. They say, once you're an alcoholic, you're always an alcoholic. That's bullcrap. We have people in here that were alcoholics, and now they're drinking moderately, and they're not alcoholics. They haven't been around me for like 15 years. I've seen it. They didn't get drunk one day. They drink at night. They drink it properly. It's on our rule on how you can properly drink alcohol. And there's no such thing. God did not create somebody to be an alcoholic. You can drink alcohol in moderation, and it's not going to harm you. Even if you were a drunkard in your past, you can confess that sin, stop becoming a drunkard. It's the same. Do you tell people who are gluttons and overfat to stop eating? All you tell them is to moderate their food. You should not tell a guy who drinks alcohol to stop drinking alcohol, but to moderate it. In the beginning, he may have to stop it for a while to get out of that situation he's in, and then reintroduce him to the alcohol in moderation. We have many brothers that have been in that situation, and now they're 100% okay, and they drink wine moderately and alcohol. The big thing is when you start seeing people getting drunk or drinking it when they shouldn't, like if it's in the morning time or something, there's certain signs. By my rule is going to tell you how properly you drink alcohol. Another point they would tell you too, they say, now they are saying, now I am hearing this has changed now, where now you could have 2 glasses of wine a day, and it's good for the alcohol. But these crazy people would say, if you're drinking 1 or 2 glasses of wine a day, you're already an alcoholic. You're addicted. Well, when Advent comes, I'm not drinking alcohol, and I don't have withdrawal symptoms. The brothers don't got to go into my RV and hold me down. I'm not looking, seeing pink elephants. I mean, I got no problem, all right? I just abstain from it for 40 days or for Lent days for Advent, and it's no problem. So where's the addiction, see? And God blesses you when you do things in moderation, but he's not making you addicted to them. Addiction comes from your misuse of the thing, and then you become a slave to it because then your body becomes addicted and craves unnaturally after it. Okay, so that's on that. Now, the other thing I just said in here is exercise is extremely important. The spirit indeed is willing and the flesh is weak. I said, you could have the spirit and desire to want to do so much for God. But if you're weak and your body's sick, you can't do anything. If you got to go out, me speaking today now, it just takes energy. If I didn't have it, I wouldn't even be able to speak into you. So you got to take care of your body exercise-wise also. So you need physical strength in your body. You have to take care of your body, okay, if you want to do these things. Because if you don't take care of your body and exercise properly, it's a sin against the fifth commandment because you're harming or you're killing your body. Now, If you're in those sinful categories, then you'll know to what degree I'm talking about. Now, as I said, we're talking about aerobic exercises and muscle building exercises. You need to do both. Now, in the old days, when they didn't have cars and mass transit and all that, people were naturally in good shape. They didn't have cars. They walked a lot of time around. They didn't have tractors. You have to pull things. There was a lot more physical labor being done in the days of Abraham and St. Paul, where just by the fact that he walked several miles a day, those guys were in shape because there was no modern transit. Today, we have all these modern things. That's why, and people don't walk or run anymore. If you can't run, I'm going to give you some examples of how to exercise, on exercise things, but they sit back and they don't do anything. But back then, you didn't have to be so emphasizing it because your whole natural daily life occurred, and most people were ranchers and farmers, which is daily exercise. So if you're doing enough exercise on your own, because you're doing manual labor during the day, you don't need to do any extra exercises. You don't. Or if you're doing some manual labor but not enough, you need to supplement it and you need to do exercises. We say no pain and no gain. Now, we're not talking about extreme pain neither. Just minor exertion. Only athletes have to exercise to the point where they get that extreme pain. And when I was a football player, we did it. And it was like torture. But that's how you get strong and bigger. You don't need to do. I'm not trying to. Some people get scared off because they think they need to do exercise like that. All I'm saying is, when you do your exercises, unless you're going to be an athlete, all you need to do is some exertion. It doesn't have to be great exertion, but there needs to be some exertion. A lot of people are so effeminate and afraid of pain that they don't even want to. They sweat a little bit and they start getting crazy. They get a little exertion and they don't want to do it anymore. Well, you're worthless. Where is your sacrifice? By the way, folks, as Catholics, when you do your exercise, offer it up as penance. I exercise now 3 times a week. I used to do it 5 times. I'm doing 3 times a week. And when I get on there to run, I says I'm going to be on the torture rack because not only do I lift the dumbbells, you know. Obama, the dumbbell. Remember you got the dumbbell prize? No, that was a Nobel Prize. I got dumbbells, and I tell Ron, I'm going on the torture rack. You know? And so I do, and I do it. I don't do it like I used to do when I was young, where I kill my, you know, where you're popping, vessels are popping out. But you got to exert yourself a little bit. So it's a muscular weight. And then I walk every day, except for on the Lord's Day and Holy Days of Obligation. I take about a 2-mile walk, and I do my rosary and my chapel to St. Michael, and I go up a big hill, that Foch by the library, big hill, and I take that walk every day, and that's my aerobic. I used to run, but I can't handle it for several reasons. My lungs are weak, and my bones are weak. So a lot of people may find that you can't run. Fine. You can even have an exercise bike. Those are very good exercise bikes. Use the exercise bikes to get that aerobic, and some of the exercise bikes also give you muscle pullback. Exercise bikes is good. Jumping jacks I do, squats, sit-ups, push-ups, pull-ups. Now another good thing is steam baths, hot baths, and saunas. Very good, because they stimulate, as you get older, if you're not going to do as much exercise as you did when you were an athlete, because you would sweat a good sweat, you can take a hot bath and a sauna, which will produce that same kind of sweat. It pulls the sweat and impurities out of your body, stimulates your system, and is extremely good for you.
Hello, this is Dr. Mercola, and if you haven't guessed already, today we're going to talk about saunas. And many people don't realize how they've been around for centuries and have come from a rich tradition of providing healthful benefits. It relaxes your muscles and helps soothe aches and pains, and the high temperatures actually release endorphins, endogenous morphine substances that causes generalized pain relief. So most natural health experts are in strong agreement that saunas are a very useful tool to help aid in detoxifications. They help cleanse your skin and they induce a very deep sleep. When your body temperature rises in the evening from a sauna, it will fall by bedtime, helping you to really facilitate sleep. And I frequently use sauna treatments before I go to bed, and I can strongly confirm that this has been my experience. Now, it also improves cardiovascular performance, as with regular sauna use, you can help train your heart muscles and improve cardiovascular output. It also influences your regulatory system. Additionally, I like to add sauna therapy at the end of my peak ache workout. And what I typically do is, after I finish the workout, I'll go on a rebounder for a few minutes, which helps eliminate some of the waste products and improve the lymphatic circulation. Then I do the sauna therapy. Then I go back out and do the rebound again for a few minutes.
hot baths, saunas, and steam baths. In town here, this is a hot spring center. And probably they say it's the best hot springs in the world. That's what they say. Because it doesn't have a sulfur smell about it, but it has sulfur in here, but it has all these other minerals that are even better than the other hot springs, they say, in the world. I know about that, but I take a hot bath once a week. I would like to take it twice a week or three times a week if I could afford it. So I take it once a week. And what a benefit that is to your health. It's many things you can see coming from that. Or just if you didn't have that, a steam bath or a sauna bath, that's another good way. And it burns off calories, takes out impurities, stimulates the system. And like I said, you don't have to overexert yourself unless you're training for sports or combat. If you try to do too much, you may not be able to bear it and thus quit. It may even hurt you. You only need to do enough for minor exertion, and this will still greatly be beneficial for your body and stamina. Even if you're laid up in bed, and you can still do some exercises if you're in bed with whatever parts of your body that can move. If you can still move your arms, give me a dumbbell. Put Obama on this side and Bush on that side, and I can do my dumbbells if you're laying in bed. If you can only move your hand, do wrist curls, as we used to say. We did wrist curls. Not brothers now, but we used to lift weights and the wrist curls. We did all kinds of weightlifting. Anyway, but three times a week is sufficient for me at least. But I walk every day though, and they tell you like it's good to walk after or before a meal. I think the English call it a constitution. That's what they call it. And they walk before or after a meal because it's good for the digestion. So that I do every day. But you may find out if you're overweight and stuff, and you're sinfully over fat. And you're sinfully in that category, then you may want to exercise every day a little bit more. So you got to make sure you're doing these things. If you're not, you have no excuse before God. Nobody does for being over fat. Because nobody forces you to eat unless they're shoving a tube down your throat, unless you're being force-fed. Now, we'll get into that later about the people who make excuses and say they can't lose weight. Maybe we'll talk about that now because we're talking about it. Be careful, that's heresy if you say you can't lose weight. It's actually heresy. And you're lacking common sense. And guess what? The root of your sin then is pride. Allah said the root of all sin is pride. That's Ecclesiastes 10:15. Oh, it's impossible for you to lose weight, all right? All right. First of all, I'm going to show you all the people who have lost weight that were extremely overweight and now they're thin. I'm going to show you an example. One of them is Al Sharpton. But look at these pictures. Okay, so these people prove you to be wrong if you say you can't lose weight and can't lose fat. Now, nature and common sense is another proof of it. If I put you in prison, and I had control over you, and put you on bread and water for about a month, you watch how fast you start losing weight, right? Or, if someone deprived you of food altogether, you would rapidly lose weight to the point of being extremely thin, and then emaciated, and then dead. You never saw a fat person in one of these concentration camps where they ran out of food, or whatever. You're all skinny. Don't lie to me. And the minute you say you can't lose weight, you're all right. That's a mortal sin in itself. That's heresy. If they start moaning and complaining, I can't.
I have to have chocolate last thing at night.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. But promise yourself.
I do. Every
day. You go swimming
in
the morning.
No, but like last week, every day I did something. I do something every day and everybody beats me up because I have a chocolate.
I'm not doing anymore. Sorry, I'm not.
Just try a little shadow boxing.
I promise you, it will not kill you, Sharon.
No, if I kill you, I am not doing it! Can you not hear me, you Well, then stop it! Have you ever been my way? No, you haven't!
No,
so shut the
help
up!
You. I'm just trying to help you.
No, you're not helping me!
I'm here to help you, Sharon.
You are not helping me!
I've trained thousands of people nearly your way.
Stop you!
Because you can't
tell me what my body can do! You are talking to your
got enough strength to use your voice and shout at me like that. You've got enough strength to get back on the circuit.
And you know what?
All right?
I'm shouting!
Stop being rude to people.
And you say my back! I am not doing it!
That's bad. That's like telling your Lord you can't get out of a mortal sin. Now, with people that are over fat, there's a dilemma, but there's also a good thing about it. Here's what I'm going to get into. I'm not trying to just pick on overfat people. As I said, venial sins and mortal sins are the same no matter what your sin is. It's still a venial or mortal sin. I have to work on patience. So you might even say sometimes I commit venial sins of impatience. I do. And I'm working on it. So I'm no different than a person who's venially sinfully overfat. Only with the overfat person you can see it. They carry it around with them all day. It doesn't. They can't get rid of it. They wake up and they see it. Now, that's good and it's bad. I say it's good because it's right in their face. They can't hide. They can't hide from what they're fat. Some of them try to do it. That's why we tell you it's important to take measurements, to weigh yourself and take measurements, or that's another way of trying to hide it from yourself. You purposely don't weigh yourself and measure yourself when you should. But when you're looking at someone, so even in their case, because it's an obvious thing, you can see it. But I'm not trying to say that they're more evil than my venial sin of being impatient or whatever your venial sin is. Most people are guilty of one or more venial sins, and our life is to try to work, and we have to work on it. Now, the question, here's what venial sins, though. If you don't work to overcome your venial sins, honestly try to overcome your venial sins, you will eventually fall into one or more mortal sins of one sort or another. God will finally curse you. I'll give you an example. If a person's in the venially sin over fat category and he says, I can't lose weight, and he's not trying to lose weight, and he's stubborn, he's not doing it for a long time. And I'm not saying you'll either fall into the mortally sinful overweight fat category, but that's not usually what happens. What will happen while you're in that venial sin category of being greatly overweight, you may become prideful. You may become, lust comes into you. That happens a lot of you. You get lust. You start falling to sins of lust, fornication, pride. You start to become very argumentative with people. You start lying. And so other sins come in. And then when you look at a person like that, you can say, even though you're in the venial sin category, you're not trying to overcome it because now you fell into the mortal sin category. Now you're committing mortal sins. And now, another very important part. When you're in a venial sin category, you're still amongst us in good standing. You're still a brother. All of us have venial sins. Most all of us have venial sins to overcome. And so we love the brothers. We don't pester them when they're in venial sin. That's why St. Paul certain brothers bear with one another because you're weak too. And if you want God to bear with you, you bear with them. Or so we'd be killing one another 24 hours a day. You'd be fighting me over my impatience. I'd be fighting him over because they're over fat. This one because he's over whatever his venial sin is. And so venial sins, as long as you're only in the venial sin category or committing venial sins, we bear with you patiently. However, when you cross into the mortal sin category, that's where everything changes dramatically and quickly. Then you must be avoided. You must be severely punished. And if you're not trying to overcome your mortal sin, then you will be under a minor excommunication and completely separated from the brothers. You'd still be Catholic, but we can't even be in religious communion with you. If you're guilty of mortal sin, we can't. Now, some people may say this. There's another difference with people that are in the sinful overfat category or underfat category. Let's say you're committing venial sins or mortal sins, even over fat, and you really confess your sin to a priest, and you really mean it. Well, hope you mean it. You confess your sin. You say, "Bless me, Father, I'm guilty of sin of gluttony. I'm venially sinfully over fat or mortally sinfully over fat." You will be forgiven, and your sin will be remitted. But your weight still stays there. Because now you got to work on losing it. So that's why I say mortal sin category and venial sin category. Because even though you're in that category, you may not always be guilty of the sin. Because if you confessed it to a priest and you're great and you're extremely overweight in a mortal sin category, your mortal sin is forgiven as long as it's a sincere confession. Even though now you're still greatly overweight for a while because you're working on it. And as long as you're sincerely working on losing weight and getting into a normal, at least venially sinful and normal, fine. You're a brother. You're in good standing. No problem with that. But if we measure you and we find out that you're not losing weight, and you're not sincerely trying to lose weight, and you're in the mortal sin category, guess what? You're still guilty of mortal sin. Because confession requires not only a sincere sorrow for your sin and a confession of your sin, but a firm purpose of amendment. Which means you have to start set up by losing weight. So if you went to the priest and you were in the mortal sin category and you confessed your sin, you're no longer guilty, but we're going to watch you and measure you, weigh you every 2 weeks. And if we see you're not losing weight, then we say, guess what? You're still guilty of mortal sin. You're under a minor excommunication. And until you start showing us that you start losing weight, a good priest will not even give you absolution. He would then tell you, you came to me before and you're the same weight or you even more. Not until you come down to 10 pounds, come back to me, and then we'll start working on it all over again. Now, a person who's in venial sins, like I said, we don't pester them, we don't bother them. But you're in venial sins. So if you confess your venial sin, you'd be forgiven of it. As long as you're sincerely working to overcome it. If you don't, you remain in your venial sin. A lot of people die in venial sin. That's why there's a purgatory. Sins are remitted in purgatory. Those are venial sins, not mortal sins. You die in mortal sin, you go to hell. So a lot of Catholics who are even in heaven died in venial sin. But the thing you got to worry about venial sins, though, is that if you don't really try to overcome them consistently, you're going to end up falling into one or more mortal sins, of some other type of a mortal sin because of that. That's how we deal with people that are in these conditions. That's why I said mortal sin category, venial sin category. Now, for Catholics that are catechumens that are coming into the church, and they're in the mortal sin category, that no catechumen is allowed to come into the church unless he overcame his mortal sins. His mortal sins and venial sins will all be remitted if he's going to be baptized, or if he abjures and comes in, he can go to a priest, but he has to no longer be committing any mortal sins. He has to have that firm purpose of amendment. So now, let's say you get a person who's a catechumen and he's extremely overweight, the mortal sin over fat category. You've got to tell that person, fine, you made a profession of faith, you seem to be sincere. Now you have to get yourself into at least the venial sin category before we can baptize you and bring you into the church, at least, or bring you in through abjuration. Because as long as you remain in a mortal sin category, we cannot bring you into the church. Now, if you're losing weight and you're still in that category, you are overcoming it. But you got to wait till that person gets down to the venial sin category and then you can bring him to the church. The church never teaches you need to be perfect to be baptized. So you could be guilty of venial sins and faults like we are even. But you cannot be guilty of mortal sin. So that's how we help catechumens when they come in here, that if they're in the venial sin category, there's no problem. They still should be working on it, but they can come in. But if they're in the mortal sin category, you can't come in till you start getting into the venial sin category, and we're going to test you. Now, the only way a person who's in the mortal sin category, a catechumen, that's in the mortal sin category, and he really starting to lose weight, but he's still in that category, the only way he can come into the church is if he's in danger of death. And you have a record that he is sincere and he's trying to lose weight, then you can baptize him if he's in danger of death. Or have him take an abjuration and bring him to the church if he's in danger of death. But let's say that catechumen who was 300 pounds said, I'm working to overcome it. Now he's 320 pounds and he's not working. Then you're not supposed to baptize anybody if he's in his... Because that shows a bad mind. He's still in mortal sin in his mind, so you can't bring him in. So, but I'm talking about the person who's 300 pounds... And they're sincere and they want to be Catholic. And we say, you got to lose weight. And let's say they got to get down to 250 or whatever. And then they're only down to 280 and they're dying. But they're down to 280. And come on, baptize him, bring him in. Because he's losing weight. But if he's 320, he's gone the other way, can't baptize him. All right, now the last part of this lecture, we're going to get into methods of measuring body fat. Because a lot of people will say, now please let me know, Rich, how do I measure my body fat and all that? Now I said before, the BMI, which is by height and weight, if you're in a good category according to that chart, you most likely are okay. But a lot of times that chart's not accurate. You get scrupulous on it. A lot of times you're going to find out that you're, even myself, what the BMI says I am, my body fat's a lot less than what the BMI says I am. I have a lesser body fat. Some people may have more. Now we're going to get only a few methods of measuring body fat. Now, it's easy to identify to me, I think, those who are in the mortal sin category. Those are super blubber pusses. But it's not so easy to determine maybe the guy who's in a venial sin category and on the verge of becoming mortally sinful. Or the guy who's slightly overfat on the verge of becoming venially sinfully overfat. That's a little, you got to take your measurements. You got to have your ways to measure yourself. All right. Now, there's several different ways in which you can measure body fat percentage. I'm only going to list a few here. There's a lot of ways. The most accurate way is hydrostatic weighing. Or otherwise, underwater weighing. Hydrostatic weighing involves submerging an individual into a water tank and onto an underwater scale. The test administrator measures how much water their body displaces and how much they weigh under the water. That's the most accurate way. Another is what they call a DEXA scans. That's pretty accurate too. They put you through a scan, and that tells you not only how much is your body, overall body, BFP, it tells you where it's located, so tell you your visceral fat. And it shows up, so you can see how much visceral fat you have, how much subcutaneous fat according to the DEXA scan. They got caliper methods, weigh in your thing methods, but the most inexpensive, now these two methods I mentioned to you, they're not readily accessible. You got to go to a doctor, and they may be expensive. So your average person doesn't have access to this. What we use, it's because it's readily accessible and it's inexpensive, is what they call BIA scales, bioelectrical impedance analysis scales. Use electrodes to transfer a very low level electrical current through the skin and into the underlying body tissue. The sensors then measure how much the body tissues resist the current. This data is used to estimate the total amount of water in the body, which in turn is used to estimate the fat-free mass and by extension body fat percentage. BIA scales are not as accurate as the above-mentioned methods, but accurate enough. The one we use at Mirazuda Remnant is Omron's Full Body Sensor Body Composition Monitor and Scale, which costs about $75. Now, if this scale that you're using, it puts you in a mortally sinful category and you think the scale is wrong and you have the money and the ability to go to get a hydrostatic weighing or DEXA scan, then go ahead and get it. If you're in mortal sin category, I would recommend it. If it was available and you can afford it, I would say now, if you're in the mortal sin category, because that's serious business, and you want to make sure to buy a scale that got it right. You say, Rich, I think your scale's a little off, or it's a little over. But we've been measuring your brothers here. For the most part, they're pretty accurate. I'm not saying maybe it's as accurate as something else, but when we look at the brothers in here or look at the numbers, it seems to be pretty accurate. But if you don't trust the bias scale, particularly if you're in a mortal sin category, maybe in venial sin, but I don't think I would worry about it in a venial sin category. There's any mortal sin category, then go get a DEXA scan or a hydrostatic weighing if you could. Now, the last part here is I'm going to just put up on the screen here, but you're going to get this chart in the article, and you should print it out. Now, it's called a record-keeping and body fat percentage chart. On this chart, we show you all the levels, the sinful levels, the normal levels or acceptable levels, which is the normal fat and slightly over fat of the normal levels. We show you the greatly and extremely under and over fat levels, and we show you the numbers. And you got it when you measure yourself on a scale, you take that and you can compare it and to see if you fall into a venial sin category. We have the visceral fat percentage scale and the percentages, so you can easily weigh yourself with this thing and find out. And this will be great for confessors in the church and anyone who has to estimate what's going with the what is the level of the sin here and what does this person need to do, or is the person okay. All right, so you're going to look at that here. And then on the other side, it's just one page, though. It's two-sided. I have a thing where you can keep a daily record of your food intake. If you're in venial sin, I would say, or mortal sin. Mortal sin for sure. Every day you got to weigh yourself. Venial sin, I weigh myself every day just to see, measure my calorie, to see. I don't need to do it every day, but I'm doing it because I want to find out what kind of foods can I eat, what kind of foods can I not eat. When I eat a little bit too much of this, does it go up, does it go down? And then when I settle into knowing what I can eat and the amounts I can eat, then I don't need to do it every day. Now, which will bring us to another point in a second, but you have on this chart enough to measure yourself every day for 30 days. Almost a month, unless it's a 31-day month. And then you get another chart and you continue from there and you're keeping a record. Basically, maybe you only need to measure... here's the thing I would say. If you're in venial sin category, and here's the other thing. As a Catholic church, as a priest, authority of the church, we don't have to tell everybody what everybody weighs. It doesn't have to be public knowledge. But in a Catholic church, you have to give it to the person who's responsible for keeping the weight charts. You do. If the church requires that to know if you're in venial sin or mortal sin. And then when the church asks it, you obey. It is a matter of sin. But they can keep it private. No one else needs to know about your weight stuff. And then they will deal one-on-one with the person according to what their problem is. If it's mortal sin, then everyone's going to know because you maybe could give that person a month to start getting better without telling anybody. But if he's obstinate mortal sin, then you have to tell people. You assign one person in the diocese, in the parish, to keep a track of these things and keep it private. But it only become public if they're an obstinate mortal sins. Then they're under a minor excommunication. Other than that, you deal with the guy who's taking your weight and the priest, and they would tell their priest so they know what their situation is. Now, the thing, if you're in venial sin category, the church would require a once-a-month weighing record, at least once a month. That'll keep you watching yourself more honest with yourself, less, because men can lie to themselves. If you know you're doing it at least once, but if you're in a venial sin category, you can do it once a week. You can do it every day. I'm in a normal category. I'm doing mine every day just to make sure to know what I, how much I can eat. It's a little, you do it to test yourself, to see what things you can eat. So, but what I'm saying, if in a Catholic church under, in the Pope would have the authority to do this, if you're in a venial sin category, you have to weigh yourself once a month and give the record to the competent authority in your parish. If you're in a mortal sin category, it has to be once a week. Once a week. If you're in a mortal sin category, once a week. And to see if you're losing. If you're in the, and here's the other thing, if you're in the normal or slightly over fat categories, maybe once or twice a year you get measured, unless something visual we see where you look like you're gaining your, where you need to be, then the church would have the authority to say, I'd like to take your weight. You look like you're putting some fat on. I want to make sure, you know. Now, some of the people, if you're slightly over fat and you're borderline in a venial sin, you want to keep a track of that. Especially if you're in the venial sin category and you're borderline in mortal sin, you really want to keep a track of it. But by this method, and even by the authority of the churches, what they have the power to do, it would keep everybody honest. It would prevent them from lying to one another. It does, and the good thing about this rule, why it took me so long to do this, we don't want all skinny people in here, or even like just perfectly fit people. We can have slightly overweight people. I even like looking at slightly overweight people, just as I do any other people. I don't look them as any different. Like the people that are in the good, slightly overweight, it makes for a nice variety of people. We don't have to all be your you know, in the same kind of category. But when it does approach to point where you're getting into the sinful categories, then you got to work on it. Let it not be said about you. Not, may you not be among these people who the scriptures talk about in Psalm 7:13. And he slew the fat ones among them. And what he means by that, mortally sinfully fat. And venial sins are not good, but it doesn't put you in mortal sin. But he's really talking about mortally sinfully fat people. And he slew the fat ones among them. And he didn't mean, and he meant fat also too. Which is a sign, and it's like I said, let this be a sign for you to convert. And don't be full of pride. You hear from so many people, I can't do it, I can't do it. Let me get a hold of you for a month. I'll show you, you'll do it. Don't be lying. And when you say you can't do it, you're a heretic. I don't want to hear that out of your mouth. I don't want to hear it. Does it, you know, when people who are committing adultery say, I can't stop? Okay, so keep doing it. It's fine. Is that fine with God? No, you can't stop. But guess what, folks? I was a horrible, horrible fornicator myself. And I'm chaste all these years, and I love it. So don't tell me you can't do it. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. This recording was produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878, and can be accessed on my website at www.johnthebaptist.us.